When the internet was first designed, its architects envisioned it would have a democratizing effect. But as our lives increasingly move online, the issue of inequality grows, especially when it comes to smartphones. This is the argument in a recent Wired magazine piece by Julia Ticona. She's an assistant professor at the University of Pennsylvania, and her forthcoming book is called Left to Our Own Devices. Julia, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's interesting to me that, you know, when smartphones first came about, they were often required for white-collar work, but now it seems they're necessary even for a low-wage hourly job, part-time jobs, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I've been interviewing folks who, you know, I'm a sociologist. Sociologists call these folks precarious workers. So these are people who they might be doing temp work, contract work. They might be independently employed. I've been talking to folks who are doing this kind of work who are making really high wages and also those who are making really low wages. And what I found is that for both sets of these workers, digital technologies have kind of sneakily become really infrastructural. You know, we've been having this big conversation in this country about infrastructure and what counts as infrastructure. Whether you're a highly paid consultant or whether you're working under the table in landscaping or construction, technologies like smartphones really allow these workers to hop between gigs, to coordinate all kinds of different clients, to adapt to issues on the fly, and to really carve out some certainty or some security out of really uncertain economic circumstances.
But what this all boils down to is that even if you're making minimum wage, in order to interact with your employer and change your schedule, you know, put in your hours, oftentimes you have to have that smartphone. And you note that that means if you don't have internet access at home, if you can't afford a home Wi-Fi, you're sometimes going to coffee shops wherever you can get it free. These workers end up getting harassed. And it leads to this cognitive load that you're talking about. So there's not only the financial burden, but there's this cognitive burden as well. What do you mean by the cognitive burden?
These workers that we often think about as being on the wrong side of the digital divide actually are not. They're including themselves in the digital economy. But in order to do so required constant effort, whether that was trying to find free sources of Wi-Fi, like you said, at McDonald's, coffee shops in their neighborhood. Libraries nowadays are unfortunately few and far between. Their hours are really limited. Also, just juggling lots of different kinds of phones. What we see is that when these workers are able to afford phones, they're often opting for lower price phones, of course. But those lower price phones don't really work as well as the higher price ones, as we often see with consumer goods. They're more prone to viruses. They break much more easily. It was really striking to see the ways that this kind of precarity, this kind of unpredictability, instability in connectivity is something they always have to be thinking about in order to just maintain the jobs that they have now.
I mean, speaking of not getting the same kind of phones that many, you know, higher wage workers do, they also don't get the same contracts. How affordable your contract is often depends on your credit score. And if you're making minimum wage, you know, sometimes your credit score isn't the best. Maybe they don't see you as a great risk. So there have been some court cases. New York City sued T-Mobile for predatory practices when it came to some of these rental phones or no contract phones, pay as you go. A similar lawsuit is being brought against Sprint. Can you tell us a little bit about the sometimes predatory practices these companies are involved in?
You know, these are forms of what's been called predatory inclusion, basically saying to people who have been systematically excluded from different kinds of goods and services, you know, here you go. You can have access to this, but it's going to cost you. This happens all over our economy. It happens when people are blocked from accessing something that's really necessary to them, housing, student loans, and in the case of my research, the internet. This is a form of exploitation of the poor.
It feels as though the genie's out of the bottle, and at this point, we're not going to stop employers from requiring even low-wage workers to have cell phones and even smartphones. So is this a governmental solution? We think of government support in terms of subsidized health care or unemployment insurance, maybe food stamps. Do we need a similar program when it comes to smartphones and cell phone access?
You know, we actually have one. We have what's called the Lifeline Program. It's run through the Federal Communication Commission, the FCC. And it was actually a bipartisan program. It was started by President Reagan. It enjoyed lots of support across the aisle for many years. Unfortunately, this program has become, like a lot else in our politics, has become very politically polarized over the past few decades. So these programs are really important. But the takeaway from this, and this is really important, is not necessarily just that we can give everybody a free phone and we'll be okay, right? That all these inequalities are going to go away. These are just consequences of, or symptoms of, much, much bigger social issues.
That's Julia Tacona, assistant professor at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Pennsylvania. Julia, thank you so much.
Thank you.